Excuse me, this is the operator. The recording has started. You may now resume your session.
Thanks very much. This is Thomas Rickert speaking for the record, and we would now like to resume our discussion on minority views or other expressions of thoughts on the jurisdiction topic. And we will now continue with the queue. So Sebastian will go first, then Greg, then Cavus, and then we go back to Parminder. And for those who want to be added to the list and speak, please raise your hand, or should you be on the phone line only, give us a signal so that we can add you to the queue. Sebastian, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much. I am very honored to be the first speaker in this afternoon session. I wanted to make three remarks or comments. The first one is regarding this discussion. We have to see where we come from and, of course, where we are going and what is the step we are doing here and what could be the next step. I don't think it's the end of the journey, and I don't think if I can is still alive, we will have a long journey. And that's to be taken into account in our thinking. Concerning the subgroup report, I would like very much to support it like it is today to go for public comments. And I would like to add what are, from my point of view, the next step possible. I suggest that during the discussion about the document gathering the work of all subgroups, we study how and where the next step regarding open topic like this very important one about immunity will be handled and push a step forward after the completion of the work of our work stream 2. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sebastian. Cavus is next.
Thank you, Thomas. I have one comment and I have two short questions. I hope I would not go beyond 2 minutes. I hope.
Cavus, we don't have the 2 minute clock running. So.
No. I said I hope. Whether you have 2 minutes or not 2 minutes, I don't go to more than that. I know that you, this time you are very generous and I thank you very much. Danke schön.
Bitte sehr.
Ja. Arigato gozaimashita in Japanese, yeah. Chairman or co-chair or Thomas, distinguished colleagues, I am not comfortable and even surprised to refer to the minority view and majority view on this particular issue. Jurisdiction is an affair between the governments. It's not between some private people or individual on one hand and government on the other hand. So let us not refer to minority view and majority views. Let us say the statement made by colleagues that may not be comfortable with the results, but not minority. An individual or somebody with representing 250 million people could not be seen as minority vis-a-vis two or three individuals who may represent themselves or may represent some other people. So we cannot say that. The issue is between the governments. I think I support the statement made by Ambassador Benedicto, indicating that after all of these issues discussed, the unilateral governance of the jurisdiction remain within the hand of one single government. During the final stage of the work stream 1, when the people wanted to justify that that single government agreed with the process of the transition, in particular during the testimony before the subcommittee of Senate, it was several times mentioned that, don't worry, we maintain the jurisdiction to remain within hand of us. That means that single government. So the issue was designed and envisaged and orchestrated as such. So we did not expect that this group doing more than what they have done. Because that was the situation. And I think that what was said is exactly correct, that the jurisdiction remains within the governance and hand of that single country. So it is not majority, it is minority. It is something that the remaining part of the transition was more or less technical part, apart from some accountability, which is very good that now community has some actions to take. So our support to the statement made by the ambassador and the other colleagues who may make it after. Now, my question, this is a comment, my question, Chair, to you. Question one, how the course of action mentioned in the two recommendations will be carried out, and is there any guarantee that would be carried out successfully? Saying that ICAN will do that, ICAN will take that, apart from just some words and apart from some wishful thinking, whether in fact would have some reality. It may be some visions, and whether in terms of reality, I don't know. And the second question is that the statement made by Ambassador and maybe by some other colleagues to join them, what is the next step to consider how to follow up this course of action? I am not thinking of ATRT procedure. I want a practical way how we do that. We should not take it on a statement to be noted. It requires actions. It requires attentions. The issue is stayed there and must be continued to be resolved in one way or other. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Cavus. Let me try to respond to the points you made. Firstly, the term minority report is used quite commonly in the ICANN processes. And as you well know, everyone in this room, as well as joining remotely, is participating in this effort in their personal capacity. So as much as David is not here as Verizon, he's here as David McAuley, we are not here representing the people of our nations if we are government representatives or of our companies or associations. Nonetheless, I think it's an important point that you make, that certainly governments, if they speak in their capacities as governments, have huge populations they represent. And the term minority statement might suggest to somebody who's not familiar with the model that we're using to create policy, that populations or governance might be marginalized. So I don't have any issues whatsoever with calling this a dissenting opinion or some other term that Tiago and Benedicto might find useful to more adequately describe the nature of that paper. You mentioned that things have been said during hearings in Washington and that therefore the process was designed to make the place of incorporation stay in Washington. I have followed those hearings, and to my recollection, there has been no statement made by a CCWG representative. I do remember that Fadi Shehadi has testified on the Hill, so have Steve Del Bianco and a few others, but nobody has made any intervention on behalf of the CCWG precluding the outcome of the CCWG's deliberations. And I think that our process was very open, and I'm sure that Greg will be in a position to speak to that as well. So the topic of changing jurisdiction or even changing place of incorporation was not out of scope, but it was just that during the course of the discussions in the sub-team, such ideas did not get sufficient traction to be eligible for consensus. With respect to the question about the course of action, as you know, our recommendations, once adopted by the plenary, need to be approved by the chartering organizations and by the board, and then they will be enacted. To the extent that your question relates to the OFAC licenses that shall be sought, we certainly have no authority over OFAC to actually grant those licenses, but what ICANN is required to do if our recommendations are being adopted, and if we get them through the second reading first, which is an important prerequisite for that, then ICANN needs to use best efforts to get these licenses. But what's done by OFAC is not within our control. With respect to the second question, and I hope that I got the question right, I think it relates to the concrete actions that will be taken based on the Brazilian statement. And I think what we should be doing is discuss this once we have the second reading. Now that the plenary has the opportunity to listen to all the arguments, there may be a change of positions in the plenary. So the plenary might raise substantial objections against the report, right? So I think it's premature to assume that the second reading will be successful. But if it were, then our suggestion is to do two things. The first of which is to make more explicit reference to the points that have been raised in the documentation that has been developed in the course of the work of the sub-team. And as Greg mentioned before we broke for lunch, he said that a lot of those points that have been mentioned by Benedicto, Tiago, and also Parminder have been subject of debate in the sub-team. So we will highlight the reference to the appendices in which these arguments can be found so that it doesn't get sort of buried in the appendices. And the second thing that we suggest doing is actually creating a separate document with the transcript of this very session and also make that part of our report so that for everyone to see during further debates on jurisdiction what points have been raised and how this interaction went on in the CCWG, so that we have a tangible takeaway for future jurisdiction-related debates to build on. So I think that covers the four points in total that I have noted from your intervention. And now I think we can move to Parminder again. Parminder, the floor is yours, please.
Thank you, Chair. Briefly, I would conclude the earlier intervention, and I was at the last point. For record, I'm Parminder speaking. This point was about when the report says that we cannot recommend changes to registry agreement. I was arguing that registry agreement for me is the template contract and not the specific contract, and therefore I do not want erroneous statements to go in the name of CCWG in the final report, and this is up to you now to look at it whether this is a correct position or not. And I will close it at that. Just add that I'm very thankful that so much time was given us to make these comments, but I would request that there are specific questions and proposals in these comments which should be responded to. For example, I mentioned that the menu approach should be elaborated by saying that we nudge ICANN to consider not automatically choosing California law or some such things, and they are part of the record. So please would like the group to consider those things. And I have to now, when I have the mic, respond to the statement which our rapporteur Greg made, who said that immunity discussions took place at various points and under quotations, without regard to what was on agenda. And that is true. That's what I have been saying. Yes, we kept on trying to push immunity-based discussions. The question, however, is why was it never on agenda? Never during the year and a quarter was this issue on agenda. And that's the question. You are right, Greg. They were discussed despite being on agenda. The question is, why didn't it ever make to the agenda, and which is the problem? And even when there were six clusters in the end to be discussed, this was not discussed. There were issues about participation. Let me not talk about it. But to look forward in a positive manner, I see a lot of mentions, including by Thomas and Greg, that this is not the end of the road. There would be other forums. And then an observation by George in the chat window, whether there is a way to reflect this in the report, whether we can make it clear that, yes. And again, I go back to the report where Greg says that we could not discuss other issues because they were short, we were short of time. And that's why we took two and not the other four. But these are important issues. Now, I don't agree that this is okay to be done, but even if it was done, it needs to be put on record that these were the issues. We could not conclude them. These were the range of views, and the kind of recommendation which Brazil puts it was proposed, but there are advantages and disadvantages. And I again refer to the fact that advantages and disadvantages of options like fixed law option in the choice of law section and other possible options have been put there, which were actually only discussed, what were never recommended. So records of important discussions and possible recommendations do exist in the report. In the same way, why can't we put the immunity-based discussions and one possible recommendation, which is the current recommendation by Brazil, in the report, seeing that we were rushed for time, we could not either take it up fully or during taking it up, we did not see that there would be a consensus, and it is a work in progress and future forums to look at it. Now, if this kind of thing can be considered, I think we missed enough scope to agree to a few things, though I still keep on thinking the process has been initiated by the fact that this issue was never formally on the agenda for a very, very long time that the group met on the jurisdiction issue. Thank you very much, Thomas.
Thanks very much, Parminder. I would like to briefly respond to a few points that you made. One is related to the change of contracts, where you said that you're asking for a response why those can't be changed. ICANN has contracts with hundreds, if not thousands of contracted parties, and our group does not have any authority whatsoever to change those contracts or to force ICANN to change unilaterally its contracts. The contracts with registries and registrars have two possibilities for changing, one of which is through consensus policies, i.e. PDPs that go through the GNSO, and the other route is contract negotiations, and that process for contract changes is specified in the registrar accreditation agreement and in the registry agreement, and therefore our forces, our powers are limited to recommending to look into those issues to make into those contracts and the change processes to come up with some amendments or changes to those contracts. The second point is the discussion of immunities. I'm sure that Greg will be able to point to specific meetings where that has been discussed, so I think that can be clarified. And with respect to your point that the recommendations or the points that were discussed that didn't make it to recommendations should be referenced to better. I think I said earlier in response to Cavus's intervention that we will make sure that there are stronger links from the report to the appendices, including the transcript of this very meeting, so that these viewpoints and substantive discussions are better visible. Let's now move to Fazi.
Jorge was before me, actually.
I don't mind. Jorge, go ahead.
Okay. Jorge Cancio for the record, and thank you, Farsi. I was actually expecting your intervention to respond to it afterwards, but now you can, we can do it the other way around. Now seriously, I think that there have been many interventions in the direction of saying, okay, we had substantive discussions on some issues. However, those discussions, for instance, on the issue of limited or tailor-made or bespoke immunities, didn't really get to the final point, be it for scheduling reasons, for timing issues, for whatever reasons. But I think it would be kind of unfair to leave it by that, and I understand, or I think I understand that you want to make some clearer linkages to the places or the instances where we discussed that, but I think that probably it would make sense to describe this explicitly in the report, and also kind of agree, because in the end it's not an agreement of on a specific recommendation, but an agreement on a fact that we had these substantive discussions, that we didn't get to a point of conclusion on them, and that probably it would make sense to have some sort of follow-up, I don't know, in a work stream 3 or in a different kind of process on these issues, because they are issues that are put on the table by different stakeholders. They are, of course, legitimate. We haven't discussed them to the end, and so I think it would make sense to include something in the report recommending or suggesting that there should be a way forward on them. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Jorge. Now we can move to Fazane, please.
Thank you. Fazane speaking. I am astonished that some say because a statement comes from a government, it should be given more weight. We should know that the issues that were reported, the jurisdictional issues, were reported by mostly non-governmental people that faced jurisdictional problems when using the DNS. And I also like to point out that I want to hear more about support for the process of this subgroup and its recommendations, because it has been vehemently criticized by some. I would frame it as unfairly criticized, and I don't think delegitimizing the process of the subgroup will benefit the DNS users that are facing sanctions, and the recommendations of the subgroup will be if implemented, will facilitate their access to DNS, something we have forgotten them for the past 19 years. So it is time now to set aside the political battle of jurisdiction and think about pragmatic solutions that can help DNS access. And so I do want to know that even without minority statement, there is support for the recommendations, especially for OFAC recommendations. And I think that is a very important thing for the for us for later to advocate for its implementation of the recommendation. The other, and another small point that I wanted to make, I do I have supported the discussion about partial immunity of ICANN. I think it's something that we should definitely discuss. We have been having problems with CCTLD delegation, and .IR was, as we know, there was a case already about .IR in the U.S. Court about its attachment. I think for that reason, we need to definitely look into partial immunity for ICANN, but I don't think this subgroup has the mandate or can do it. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Fazi. Since you all also mentioned further debate, and since Jorge made the suggestion, I think we as CCWG are not in a position to kick off a new process. We have been tasked to look into a limited number of issues for a limited period of time with a limited budget given. And with us coming up with proposals to come into existence in various reincarnations over and over again, I think can't be done procedurally. I think what we are doing is make the report a very useful tool for further debates, which will surely take place, but I'm not sure that we can really trigger this because we don't have the mandate to do so. And I think that, if there shall be another cross-constituency effort, or if this shall be dealt with in ATRTs, that's something elsewhere to be decided, but not by the CCWG. I'm just cautious of not creating expectations about what this group can and can't do with overstepping or overreaching our actual powers. But I'm more than happy to resume the discussion on that. We're now with the minority statements once we get to the recommendations and the second reading. I now have Greg, then Olga, and then David. Greg.
Thank you. Greg Chatton for the record. Couple of quick points. First, I would like to let the members of the plenary, not in the subgroup, know what our working method was and what we attempted to do over the longer period of our work was to identify issues before remedies, and immunity was identified as a remedy. But throughout the conversation about immunity, when it was brought up in the a group, seemed to start with remedies without identifying the issue that it was intended to resolve. Until really kind of the very end of the process. So that's one reason why immunity didn't come up as often as it might in our formal agendas. The discussion seemed to start with the idea that there was a remedy that was needed rather than with an issue that needed to be remedied. Second, I would say that it was not only the lack of time that resulted in the some issues making it to consensus and some not, but there was also, I think, the lack of a clear path forward based on the views that were being expressed in the subgroup. Indeed, while we didn't come to the end of the road on those, where that road led was at best unclear. I think, for that reason, rather than dwelling on what might have happened, because that's difficult to predict, the point that we need to look at is where these conversations might take place next. And the last thing is that, you know, the issue of immunity actually is extremely complex and multi-layered. Indeed, I was thinking about the very case involving .IR that Farzi mentioned, and ICANN was not a party to that case. So immunity as to suit, which is the type of immunity that's contemplated in the IOI, would not have shielded the .IR consideration that took place in that particular case. There would have been needed to have been some other sort of immunity to have there. And, of course, in the end, the decision of the court was that it was beyond the reach of the court to attach the .IR TLD. So in that instance, I think many of us would agree justice was served. But I think that only goes to point out how that subject is really a subject in and of itself, and may not even fit quite so neatly into an accountability group, given that our predicate document for this entire CCWG accountability, when it lists existing forms of accountability, and I think it's Annex E or Appendix E to the Workstream 1 report, cites litigation and recourse to the courts as an existing form of accountability for ICANN. And I would note that we spent a considerable amount of time in the group. I would not call it stalled. We spent a considerable amount of time in the group examining each litigation that ICANN was a party to and what its ramifications were for the work of the group. It's interesting to reflect that if immunity existed, even the so-called partial or tailored immunity that was referred to, I don't believe any of those cases could have been brought because they did, in fact, relate to the core functions of ICANN and not to things like employee disputes or whether the garbage was being put out improperly. So those cases which sought to hold ICANN accountable would have been barred, at least from the courts. And that's something to contemplate. I know that the second recommendation in the dissenting opinion of Brazil is that there be a further multi-stakeholder forum for those sorts of things to be adjudicated. But you know, that is another thing that is way down the line, certainly beyond the line of Workstream 2. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Greg. Now we move to Olga, please.
Thank you, Thomas. This is Olga Cavalli from the Government of Argentina. We would like to support and we understand and share the concerns raised by our colleagues from Brazil in their minority statement. Perhaps we agree with our distinguished colleague from Iran that it may not be named minority statement, perhaps dissenting opinion or what they think it's best for this important opinion. We would also like to support the idea proposed by Jorge from Switzerland of including in the report a reference for the convenience of a follow-up process on this important issue. We understand your concern, Thomas. We are not creating a new process. That's not our mandate, and I agree with you in that. And we would not be triggering a new process or creating a new one. We would like to have the concept in the report of having a follow-up on this important issue. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Olga. David?
Thank you, Thomas. It's David McCauley for the record. I simply wanted to make a brief statement. We've been talking about substance here, and I've made my views in this subgroup clear on that before, and I'm not really a supporter of the immunity idea, but I do appreciate the government of Brazil putting their thoughts on paper. I really want to speak mostly here about process. I've been involved in the subgroup since its inception. I'm not sure. I don't think I missed a meeting. And my assessment of the process has been that it's been extremely fair. It was a lot of work for one rapporteur to handle, a lot coming at the rapporteur. The process was fair, and it followed our direction. Our direction coming out of Workstream 1 was that this subgroup would consider jurisdiction by focusing on the settlement of dispute jurisdiction. That makes the litigation study that Greg mentioned critical. That was our remit, and that was the primary focus, and immunity wasn't. And so I just want to say I think the process has been extremely fair. Thank you.
Thanks very much, David. Andrea?
Thanks very much, Thomas. Andrea Brambilla, Government of Canada, for the record. And just to clarify for the transcript, it was me speaking earlier this morning as well when Bernie introduced me as Canada. I just wanted to note that we support the open multi-stakeholder process by which the jurisdiction recommendations were developed. Considering the divergence that the subgroup started with, I think a lot of progress has been made to come up with concrete and practical solutions that warrant consideration by the broader ICANN community. We certainly recognize that jurisdiction is a complex, multidimensional issue, and we're not opposed to continuing the discussion. However, in doing so, we should not lose sight of our collective goal, which is really to reinforce the accountability framework that was implemented as part of the stewardship transition. And we believe that the additional recommendations being proposed would have competing objectives in that respect. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Andrea. Parminder?
Thank you, Chair. The first point I wish to make is about your observation that which follows from my and some other people's request that can we refer to some follow-up process, to which you said that it is not in our mandate to talk about these kind of follow-up processes. Now, I really do not agree with this conception of our mandate. Our mandate is to advise ICANN to do whatever is in the power of ICANN to do, including to abolish itself. That's the power of a recommending authority. If I'm a recommending authority to Prime Minister of India, I can recommend anything which is in the power of the person whom I recommend to. It's not about my authority because I have zero authority. Recommending bodies don't have authorities. But when they recommend it to, and they're supposed to be the official recommending authorities, I'm repeating the point because this has been coming earlier. Thomas, who seems to be in conversation, so I'll wait to catch his attention. Yes, Thomas initially said that we started very open-mindedly to Kavu's points that, you know, whether U.S. jurisdiction is required or whether we have to act within it. That itself shows that our mandate is whatever our mandate is within the jurisdiction question. So I don't accept that we cannot tell ICANN, recommend ICANN, that we think that we need a similar process like ours to keep discussing the question. So the problem here is we may not agree to make that recommendation, but I would request Chair to re-clarify whether this is the situation. Because if we can ask ICANN to make a PTIE as a new organization and do all those things, we can ask it to do anything, because after all, it is up to it to whether it wants to do it or not. So that's the first question. I want, clarification from the Chair on that. And second point, when Chair responded to one of my points, what I was asking for was to mention Brazil's recommendation inside the report and not as an annex, in the same manner as some choice of law options exist inside the report right now, even though they are not agreed by consensus. Many of them actually were not properly discussed. For example, fixed California law option. They are there just as things which could be possible with their advantages and disadvantages. So please clarify my clear, specific point, which I'm now saying for the third time. I'm not talking about annexes being referred. There is a record of discussion kind of stuff in the choice of law part of the report already. non-recommendations. Why can't we have immunity in the same manner inside the report as a record of a major point which was discussed and a recommendation which was provided, supported by many, but not reached consensus, as we all said, partly due to the fact that we did not have time. So this is my proposal, and not to put it in the annex. Let me quickly also respond to what Greg said. He said immunity was shown as a remedy without showing the issues that it addressed. This is absolutely not a factual statement. And I would go on the e-list, provide all the evidence to prove that. One of the first documents which was made regarding the influence of jurisdiction of ICANN, there were about 5 or 6 points put about what are the issues which create the problem to which the immunity discussion would try to solve. This happened from the start itself. Public inputs also carried many examples, including by my organization, of all those issues, and immunity was never shown as a remedy without referring to the issues. So absolutely, I'm sorry to say, a false statement on record. And I will show the proof why it is false. And the second thing Greg said, that there was not a clarity on the path forward. I have no idea what that means, because our path forward about what needs to be done and how in our proposal has been very clear. So I would like to get clarification. What was the non-clarity in path forward? And here I may also mention that repeatedly I asked Chair to seek ICANN Legal's opinion whether a carve-out can be made from a possible immunity to enable ICANN to function under the nonprofit law of California. And this reference was never made, so we were ready for being very clear on all kinds of path forwards, and this is not a fact that there was a lack of clarity on the path forward. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Parminder. After Parminder, we have Delilah. Delilah? Yes, we can hear you. Please go ahead. Okay. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Delilah Ramouni for the French government. The question raised by Brazil minority parties. Support Brazil's proposal to stop immunity for the not a political question, but a legal question. And concerning the mandate of the subgroup of jurisdiction, we think if it is not the mandate of the subgroup, we think that in the work stream 2, the subgroup can work on the guidelines of the optional of partial immunities, and we think this is really the start of this option to explore within the subgroup. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's now move to Greg and then to Cavus, and for those who want to be added to the list, please do so now, because otherwise I would now close the queue and take stock so that we can move to the next part of the agenda. Greg.
Thanks. Greg Shatton for the record. First, just to be clear, I stand by my statements and I believe they're factually correct with regard to the process and the past that took place. Second, in terms of process, would like to point out that the second recommendation really gathered momentum because one of our members took it on themselves to take the various pieces and put them together into a first draft of that recommendation. That was Raphael Beauregard-Lacroix. And so I think we need to look to members of the subgroup in part when we think about why certain recommendations were more fully debated than others, and not merely think about time. And just to kind of refine the point about there not being a clear path forward, what I'm really referring to is the fact that there were significant and I think overall more objections to the concept of immunity, even tailored immunity, than there were those in support. I would not have used the word many to describe those in support, which is not in any way to invalidate the opinions of those who did support that position, but it is being put forward as a dissent or a minority opinion, in part because that support was not readily ascertainable, nor did it become clear in any way that there was any type of support for it beyond the support that you've seen and heard today. So I think that is what I'm saying when I refer to no clear path forward. It was clear that there was strong support for the two recommendations that did ultimately gain the approval of the subgroup. I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Oh. Thanks very much.
The mandate of the subgroup is quite similar. And I would say that it's certainly not as broad as we can have anything we want to do. And indeed, there was quite a bit of disagreement, but that was our group to go. But I think if we look at the mandate of the responsibility as a whole, really had a specific mandate. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Greg. Last in the queue is Cavus, and after that I'd like to close the queue and take stock. Cavus, please.
Thank you, Thomas. I think just what was mentioned by Greg, I have to react. Perhaps he didn't mean that when he said there was no any support. I perhaps put it in a way that, as you always mentioned, there were no sufficient traction, but not any. When you say any, that is no support at all. It was not the case. Let's make it clear. But I agree with some term you use that no sufficient traction or sufficient support. That is one thing. Second point that I want to just make it clear that reference was made by two distinguished colleagues to political statement and to the fairness. No one in this conversation, this morning and this afternoon, referred by any means to any political motivation nor fairness on the activities of the group. When you say equal footing is not between government, is not political. You're talking equal footing. You are talking gender equality. You are talking of the equal rights. They are legal issues, but not political. So I don't think that people put them in the framework of political. And fairness, I don't think that anybody at this meeting talked about unfairness of the activities of the group. Therefore, we should not refer to that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Cavus. I think we should probably do two things. One is to again confirm that we will get the transcript, which is currently in a captioning format, cleaned up and tidied up so that it can be made an appendix to our report. And then several of you have asked that we establish stronger links between the report and the issues that did not make it to recommendation status, including Parminda, who said that he wants the immunity topic to be explicitly mentioned in the report. And what I think got quite some sympathy and support was the proposal made by Jorge a little bit earlier on, which I'm going to paste into the Adobe Room chat again for everyone's review. I'm going to read it out for you. Discussions in the jurisdiction subgroup were inconclusive on some issues. An example is the question of partial immunities for ICANN. It may be that the ICANN community wishes to organize follow-up discussions on these issues, many of which are recorded in the annexes to this part of the report. So we suggest that we use this language, add that into the report, and then, as suggested, add the transcript of this meeting to the report. But now, before we can actually move to making something in the appendix to a report, we need to get the report adopted. And that leads us to the next agenda item, and that is the second reading of the jurisdiction subgroup report. And at the end of, or after Greg has shown us through the recommendations, you need to make a decision whether you want to raise an objection to the report or not. In the absence of substantive objection, we can call this a successful reading. Now, you've heard all the arguments by those who were opposing to some or all recommendations in the report, so all the facts are at your fingertips, and I think that we've done a much more thorough job on this second reading than we have done on any other second reading, because you got all the first-handed information from those who don't like the recommendations, right? And I think we've never done such an exercise before. So if you think that we can't proceed with a successful second reading, then you should object. If you think that we should keep the report and that it should make its way into the final report, then you should not object. So I guess all the facts are now on the table. We know the timing issues, that we can't really make substantive changes or any changes to the report. Otherwise, we run the risk of not having anything on jurisdiction in our final pack. And with that, I'd like to hand over to Greg to show us through the latest findings of the jurisdiction subteam. Over to you, Greg, please.
Thank you, Thomas. Greg Shatton, for the record. We will go back again through the report for the second reading. Once again, at the request of a member of the subgroup, we have this comment here. It's not part of the report, but just notes that we looked at various issues regarding a registrar that was not doing business with people with Iranian passports, and we concluded that if that was related to OFAC, there was no clear showing that it was, that the recommendations we have deal with it in an adequate fashion. And noting again that the subgroup will consider creating stress tests based on these scenarios. And as Cavus and Steve Del Bianco both noted earlier, Steve has created three stress tests related to the group. So if we go on to the next slide. This is the first of our set of recommendations regarding sanctions, and specifically OFAC sanctions. We noted that for ICANN to enter into an RAA with an applicant from a sanctioned country, it needs to get an OFAC license. The terms of the application to become a registrar state that ICANN is under no obligation to seek such licenses, and in any given case, OFAC could decide not to issue a requested license. The subgroup recommended that this sentence be amended to require ICANN to to apply for and to use best efforts to secure an OFAC license, rather than merely saying that they're under no obligation to seek such a license. This, of course, would only apply if the party is otherwise qualified to be a registrar and is not individually subject to sanctions. We also recommend that during this licensing process, ICANN should be helpful and transparent with regard to the licensing process and ICANN's efforts, including ongoing communication with the potential registrar. So that is the first of the OFAC recommendations. Next slide, please. Second recommendation relates to the approval of GTLD registries. The subgroup noted that it was difficult for residents of sanctioned countries to file new GTLD applications and make their way through the process. The applicant guidebook noted that ICANN has sought and been granted licenses as required in the past, but that OFAC could decide not to issue a requested license. The subgroup recommended that ICANN should commit to applying for and using best efforts to secure an OFAC license for all new GTLD registrants that fall into this category, as long as they are otherwise qualified and not individually subject to sanctions. Again, we recommend that ICANN should be helpful and transparent with regard to the licensing process, including ongoing communication with the applicant. That's the second OFAC recommendation. Next slide, please. Third OFAC recommendation. The subgroup noted that some non-U.S.-based registrars might be applying OFAC sanctions with registrants and potential registrants based on a mistaken assumption that they must do so simply because they have the RAA contract with ICANN. Non-U.S. registrars may also appear to apply OFAC sanctions if they cut and paste registrant agreements from U.S.-based registrars that contain OFAC provisions. And we saw a couple of examples of this in the subgroup, one of which was actually rectified by that registrar during the course of the group's work. May have been coincidental, but in any case, it was rectified. We note that ICANN cannot provide legal advice to registrars, but it can bring awareness of these issues to registrars. So the subgroup recommends that ICANN clarify to registrars that the mere existence of their RAA with ICANN does not cause them to be required to comply with OFAC sanctions. We also recommend that ICANN should explore various tools to remind registrars to understand the applicable laws under which they operate and to accurately reflect those laws in their customer relationships, including their customer contract. I'll pause here and see if there are any remarks or questions. We have one more OFAC recommendation. Let's move on to the next. I see a hand from Caboose. I don't know if that's a new hand.
Caboose, you have a question? Please go ahead.
Yes, just a small question. And in two recommendations, refer that ICANN use best effort, wishful thinking, to secure OFAC license. What is, I'm not asking him, I'm asking ourselves, what is the degree of assurance that this sort of the license be secured? Thank you.
Greg, floor is yours.
Thank you. First, I would not describe best efforts as wishful thinking or any of this as wishful thinking. Indeed, we've seen that in Workstream 1, our recommendations, once approved by the board, after, of course, being approved by the chartering organization, were put into effect. So I would expect that if these recommendations are approved all the way down the line, that they will be put into effect. And, of course, there is no assurance because we're talking about a party over which we have no control as to whether these licenses would be granted. I will note that with regard to the individual licenses, that ICANN seems to have a perfect track record in securing these licenses when they have been applied for. So I think while past performance is no guarantee of future performance, one would generally expect the same degree of success in the future, especially since we're asking ICANN to increase its commitment to getting these licenses. And even with their somewhat equivocal commitment, they've in fact gotten the licenses that were sought. So that's, I think, as much as anyone can say about that, or at least certainly as much as I can say. Why don't we move on to the next slide, please. The last of the OFAC recommendations relates to general licenses, not the specific licenses that we've been discussing so far. OFAC general licenses cover particular classes of person and types of transactions. ICANN could pursue general licenses to cover transactions integral to ICANN's role in managing the DNS and contracts for internet resources. This would enable individual transactions to proceed without needing specific licenses, as long as they fell into the type of transaction and class of person that the general license covered. A general license would need to be developed with the U.S. Department of Treasury, which is where OFAC sits within the structure, which would then need to amend the OFAC regulations to add the new license or licenses. This regulatory process may be a significant undertaking. With that in mind, the subgroup recommends that ICANN take steps to pursue one or more OFAC general licenses. That ICANN should first, as a priority, study the costs, benefits, timelines, and details of the process. ICANN should then pursue the general licenses as soon as possible, unless it discovers significant obstacles through their study. If they do discover significant obstacles, ICANN should report this fact to the ICANN community. That's us, all of us, even those not in the CCWG accountability, and seek the advice of the community on how to proceed. If ICANN is unsuccessful in getting a general license, then ICANN needs to find other ways to remove friction from transactions between ICANN and residents of sanctioned countries. Lastly, ICANN should communicate regularly about its progress to raise awareness in the ICANN community and with affected parties. That is the last of the OFAC recommendations. Next slide, please. We move on to the set of recommendations regarding choice of law and choice of venue provisions in ICANN contracts, the first of which relate to choice of law and venue provisions in the registry agreement. We identified in the subgroup several alternative approaches for the registry agreement And we also note these could also apply to the registrar accreditation agreement. The menu approach, the fixed law or California approach, the carve-out approach, the bespoke approach, and the status quo approach. These are explained and discussed in the following slides. Next slide, please. First is the menu approach. As it says here, the subgroup supports a menu approach where the governing law would be chosen before the contract is executed from a menu of possible governing laws. The menu needs to be defined. This could best be left to ICANN and the registries to define the menu. The subgroup discussed a number of possible menus, which could include either one country or a small number of countries from each ICANN geographic region. In addition, the menu could include the status quo, which is no choice of law, and or the registry's jurisdiction of incorporation, and or each of the countries in which ICANN has physical location and which thus have jurisdiction over ICANN. The subgroup has not determined what the menu items should be, but believes there should be a balance between the advantages and disadvantages of having different governing laws apply to the same base RA. This likely suggests having a relatively limited number of choices on the menu. The subgroup has not determined how options will be chosen from the menu, e.g., the registry could simply choose from the menu, or it could be negotiated with ICANN. In spite of what Parminder said in his remarks, we do not identify, nor do we contemplate the idea that it would simply be chosen by ICANN. So we either think it's a negotiation point or something that should be chosen by the registry, but we did not make a determination. So that, in essence, it would need to be agreed on as part of the agreement, as any agreement would be, but the question of how, if the registry gets to impose it on ICANN or whether it's a negotiated point is an implementation point that's beyond our subgroup's recommendations. Next slide, please. These are the remaining options. The California or fixed law approach, which would make all contracts subject to California law and U.S. law as the governing law of the contract. To be clear, that's not the governing law of the parties to the contract. It's the law under which the contract is interpreted. Next is the carve-out approach, where parts of the contract that would benefit from uniform treatment would be covered by a uniform predetermined law, for instance, California, and other parts, perhaps those that relate more to the actions of the registrar within their own country, would be governed by the law of their registry's jurisdiction or by a law chosen using the menu approach. Next is the bespoke approach, or the custom approach, which would fit each contract to the country of the registry operator. That would be the governing law, essentially home law for the registry operator. Last, of course, is the status quo approach, which is to retain the status quo of having no governing law clause in the RAA. I see a question from Steve in the chat. Negotiate implies that ICANN would need to agree with whatever menu item was selected by the contract party. Right. That is correct, although we also contemplate the possibility that it would be selected by the registry operator without ICANN having the opportunity to object, as long as was on the menu that had already been agreed to as an overall concept. Next slide, please. Next recommendation has to do with choice of law provisions and registrar accreditation agreements. Here we simply note that the same approach could be taken for the RAA as for the RA. The last choice of law approach is really actually this one relates only to choice of venue and not to choice of law. And this is in registry agreements. Under the registry agreement, disputes are resolved by binding arbitration pursuant to ICC rules. The RA base agreement contains a choice of venue provision stating that the venue is Los Angeles, California, as both the physical place and the seat of the arbitration. When entering into contracts with registries, we recommend that ICANN could offer a list of possible venues for arbitration rather than imposing Los Angeles, California venue. So there could be a venue menu. The registry that enters into the registry agreement could choose which venue it prefers at or before the time of execution of the contract if we take this menu approach. I see a series of questions from Parminder in the chat. It's a little hard to wind back and see them all. These options are listed, as I said before, because they were part of the discussion that led up to the recommendation that ultimately went there. So they're kind of fall within the recommendation itself. As it goes, immunity is not in the path of any of the recommendations that were chosen. That's why it's not mentioned here. Since it does not fall into a recommendation and does not fall within the discussion of any of the recommendations that were adopted, that's why it does not appear in the main report. Concludes the second reading of the jurisdiction subgroups report. Like to see if there are any questions.
Thanks very much, Greg. Now let me ask the floor whether there are any questions. I see Parminder's hand is up, and since this is not the part where we all express our views to the extent required to make our views heard, we should go back to the two-minute rule, so please make sure that your intervention is not exceeding 2 minutes. Parminder, the floor is yours, please.
Yes, thanks. I wouldn't take that long. The question remains why this report carries a record of options which were actually not discussed at length. They were never discussed, for example, on the email and maybe discussed in some of the face-to-face meetings which I missed. They are there in the report, but why can't we do the same with immunity-based discussions which were put up in public inputs by many members repeatedly? And as for Greg saying that they do not connect to any particular recommendation, that itself is not a very valid point. But, of course, OFEC is also a kind of seeking immunity from one part of the whole machinery, and therefore it does connect to that part. And in any case, it connects to the whole mandate. So why can't we have immunity options as a part of the report, as we have other options which are not consensual and actually were discussed many times lesser than the immunity issue? Thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Parminder. In accordance with our usual work practices, this report has reach consensus in the sub-team, and therefore we are considering it as a plenary. And for those who think that their disliking of the recommendations goes as far as objecting to the report as such, they should use that opportunity. Any more questions for Greg? The line is now, or the queue is now clear. Now, we as a group now have the opportunity to get the report ready for public consultation, to get some input from the community, whether they think that we've done a good job with the recommendation and they support us in putting this into our final package or not. So I see that two hands are raised again. Can we keep this very brief? Since Parminder just spoke, let's move to Cavus and then Parminder. Or was that unrelated, Cavus? Cavus, go ahead.
Just a question about when and how you treat the three stress tests, because it's related to the approval of these recommendations and the green light for the approval. We don't want that we approve that and then the stress tests remain on over. So please kindly find a relation between them and take necessary action that we would not be before fait accompli. Thank you.
Okay. Well, that's a good point, Cavus. We can surely go through the stress tests now, although they are not part of the recommendations. So I would suggest that we then pause this for a moment. Steve, can I ask you to join us over here? So Steve has not only volunteered to draft the three stress tests that have been communicated on the list, but he's also volunteered to show us through the stress tests what they mean and whether they were successful. So I guess you will reveal the results of your work in a moment, right? Thanks so much, Steve. And for the others, you will get back in the queue once we've gone through the stress test.
Thank you, Thomas. Steve DelBianco and staff, I assume that you can take the PDF that was circulated this morning and potentially just load pages 1, 2, and 3, and we can scroll through those. As you know, that you can click on the Adobe upper right-hand corner and it will expand into your full screen if you want to read it in detail. You can also refer to an email that Thomas sent 3 or 4 hours ago. These stress tests were prepared at the request of Cavus, and I fully supported the idea of doing a stress test instead of coming up with specific media reports and examples, the facts of which are always open to dispute when they're presented. The elegance, the attractiveness of a stress test is to propose a plausible scenario that is not necessarily a probable scenario, but it's plausible, and it's a degree of abstraction to the scenario where there doesn't need to be a debate about whether it did happen or whether it will or would happen, and there's no debate over the particulars. It's stated in general terms that are sufficiently general that they enable us to focus not on which registrar did it, when did they do it, and what was the reason, but instead focus on whether the accountability recommendations we've come up with would actually improve the ability of ICANN to be accountable to its stakeholders and its bylaws over what the status quo would be. There's three of them for the sanctions-related recommendations. And when I go through them, I think you'll quickly see we don't need to spend very much time on them in this group since they're very close to what was used by the subgroup as they developed these three sanctions-related recommendations. In other words, the sanction recommendations themselves include the stresses that they sought to alleviate. If you recall the discussion that Greg led us through, each of the recommendations on sanctions anticipated a problem that either occurred in the previous round or is occurring today or could occur in the future. So the first stress test, number one, is where a registrar would decline to accept a domain registration because they believe they're subject to sanctions that apply to the ICANN corporation. Now, I put, for example, the U.S. has OFAC sanctions, but this stress test should apply to any sanctions of any nation that could impair the ability of ICANN registrars to serve the community. Now, the consequence of a stress test is always listed as second, and the consequence would be that ICANN would fail to provide a domain name in accordance with its bylaws. The left-hand column is the existing accountability measures, and the right-hand column is how the proposed measures change that. Under existing, we noted the fact that ICANN management at any point, the legal or GDD team, could tell contract parties that they are under no obligation to worry about sanctions unless those sanctions relate to their entity. In other words, nobody is subject to a sanction just because it applies to ICANN and they are a contract party. If ICANN failed to do this diligently, the community has the ability to challenge ICANN's inaction via a community IRP, thanks to the work we did in Workstream 1. Every 5 years, an accountability and transparency review team could make recommendations, and if they're rejected by the board, a community IRP could be brought to challenge that action by the board. So flipping over to the proposed measures, we discussed what the proposed measure was with respect to the clarifications, and the clarification I suggested, which if it were credible and substantiated, it should allow registrars to have the assurance they need to go ahead and accept registration of those registrants from that country. So we would conclude that the proposed measures are an improvement and would help ICANN be accountable to global domain name registrants. I can stop for a quick question there or proceed quickly, Thomas, to the other two. It's your call.
No, let's just check whether there are questions relating to the stress test. Okay. You're good to go, Steve.
Thank you. The second one relates to a stress test of ICANN declining to enter into a registration agreement, registration accreditation agreement, or RAA, with an aspiring registrar from a country that is subject to sanctions which apply to the corporation. Again, for an example, the United States implies sanctions through the OFAC program, but many other nations, European Commission as well, have sanctions regimes of their own. So I didn't think it was appropriate to focus only on OFAC, but these stress tests use that as the example. I suggested that the consequence of doing so would mean that ICANN had failed on one of its core values, and that is, quote, promoting competition in the registration of domain names with respect to aspiring qualified registrars from countries. Today, ICANN is under no obligation to seek a license to get around that sanction. However, one of the proposed measures in the right-hand column is for ICANN to pursue general licenses to cover the transactions, and a general license would work. But if a general license were not achievable, another proposed measure is to amend ICANN's stated policy so that ICANN is required to apply for and use best efforts to actually obtain a specific OFAC license for that party. So general OFAC license covers all practices for all parties. A specific license would be with respect to a single party. And I note that the recommendation includes a request that ICANN be transparent and interactive in discussing with the community and the potential registrar the progress of its application for the license. The conclusion for this stress test is that the proposed measures are an improvement, helping ICANN meet its core value and be accountable to the global domain registrants. The third and final stress test is similar to that, in that we have a GTLD.
Shall we just pause for I'm sorry, Steve. Let's just pause for a second to see whether there are any questions relating to the second stress test. That doesn't seem to be the case. Let's proceed.
Thank you. So an applicant in the next round or subsequent rounds of GTLD application, the applicant in entering into an agreement with ICANN, in a stress test number 3, would suggest that it might fail to provide services like accepting an application, processing the application, doing the evaluation, that if it failed to provide services to a new GTLD applicant from a country that is subject to sanctions that apply to the corporation. Now, ICANN would again fail in its core value, same as the previous one. And one proposed measure to solve that is for ICANN to be committed to pursue specific OFAC license for all registry applicants that are otherwise qualified to be a registry applicant. Now, keep in mind that under the previous stress test, the recommendation for a general license, if ICANN were to obtain one, would probably eliminate the need for specific license for registry applicants. But just in case, it's repeated here. The conclusion is that proposed measure would be an improvement with respect to accountability, and serving the core values. So, Thomas, those are the three stress tests. I think it's obvious that they don't add substantial incremental value to the work of the subgroup at this point because the subgroup considered these kinds of scenarios when it put together the recommendations. But nonetheless, we were able to recycle some of the methodology we achieved in the work stream one, where we come up with these plausible scenarios and run them by the existing and proposed measures to see whether we've increased accountability. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Steve. Any questions on the third stress test? That doesn't seem to be the case. So thanks again, Cavus, for recommending that we do these three stress tests, and to Steve for drafting and explaining them. And since you know that the stress tests, which have been a requirement for Workstream 1, are not a requirement for Workstream 2, you know, nonetheless we did them, which I think was very helpful. We again exceeded the expectations of the plenary, didn't we? Smiling. Okay. So we had a queue that was, and those in the queue were patiently waiting to be heard. Thanks again, Steve. Parminder, floor is, Parminder is now lowered his hand. Parminder, do you still want to speak? Okay, that seemed to be an old hand, so Tiago or Benedicto, please.
Thank you. Well, on behalf of the government of Brazil, I'd like to formally object to both recommendations as read out by Greg Chatan, as we consider they do not address adequately areas of key concern to us, as clearly indicated in our minority opinion or dissenting opinion that we have filed. So in the light of the CCWG Charter, we request that our document, minority opinion or dissenting statement, to be attached to the report and be, when it is submitted to for public consultation. In that regard, Mr. Chair, I understand you are also proposing that the transcription of this session also be included, attached. We do not have any objection to that, of course. We'd like just to make sure that it will be identified in a distinct way from what is requested as per the charter, which is the report itself and the minority opinions. And I'd like also to take that opportunity to invite sub-working group participants, the wider CCWG participants, and the wider community to consider all the elements that will be before them. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Benedicto. Parminder, your hand is raised again. Would you like to make an intervention?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I would type it in the window, but let me also speak that I do also object to the report as it stands and disassociate myself from it for the reason that it very inadequately addresses the mandate which was given to it and does not even fully explore the issues which were central to its mandate. And because of that, the process itself was initiated by the non-consideration of important issues considered central by many, but they were not put on agenda and given adequate time. And I also would like to add that if during the readings and at these stages, if the comments may not lead to any possibilities of any substantive changes, there is very little point in making these participations. And if the time has really been the problem, as it was said also in the last stages of the subgroup, then it should have been managed better because the people who wanted outcomes of a certain kind were always ready at all times to discuss those issues. And thank you so much. It was very useful to participate in ICANN processes at all times, a lot of learning, and thank you for everyone who participated.
Thanks for your kind words, Parminder, and thanks for all your contributions. Let's now proceed to the second reading. So get ready for marking objections with a red flag in the Adobe room, because we're using the Adobe room for this exercise. It makes it easier to capture what the plenary wishes, including the remote participants. And Olga is asking how we include the stress tests in the report. We will make them an appendix to the jurisdiction sub-teams report, as well as the paper from Brazil. I intentionally did not call it minority statement now, as you will have noticed. And we will include the additional language as suggested by Jorge. So with these qualifications, those who object to submitting the report for public consultation and deeming it a successful second reading, please use the red flag in the Adobe room. If you support the recommendations, there's nothing you need to do, because we do the consensus test by just checking the level of objection. So I see Parminder's objection and Brazil's objection is also noted. We have Delilah, Cavus, and Tiago also objecting. Okay. Thanks for this. And I guess with this level of disagreement, the overall support level or objection level hasn't really changed from the first reading. I apologize. And therefore, let me congratulate Greg and his team for a successful second reading. So let's give him a round of applause. Great. So we can conclude that agenda item, which now allows us to go to AOB. So can I ask whether there's any AOB from the floor? No? Actually, I do have an AOB, and I need to look into my bag for it. We have another transition in this group. As you know, our dear friend Leon is going to leave us at the end of this meeting, and he's going to move to the dark side, as Cheryl just said. And I think it's now time for us to express our appreciation. Not only have we found an excellent co-chair, but also a great friend. And personally, not only did I enjoy Leon's professionalism and his expertise, but whenever I sort of started wishing to bite into the table because I was getting nervous or something, Leon would always stay calm. He nothing could bring him out of balance. And he would say, momentito, it's going to be fine. And momentito can take 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 hours by Mexican standards, no problem. But he always stayed calm, and he applied the magic. Does any one of you know what his nickname in the co-chair team is? We call him Leon Magic Sanchez, and I think that he really deserves that name. And I know that Leon likes the Ampelmännchen. Does any one of you know the Ampelmännchen? Those who've been in Berlin might know it, because they have traffic lights with the green man, if you go, and the red man stops you, or you should stop if you want to be a good example for role model for kids. And I think it's a good opportunity to hand this over to you, because it basically shows green light ahead for Leon. So all the best for your board efforts. We have a Trojan horse in the board now, actually the second Trojan horse in the board it is, with Becky. Thanks so much, and let me give you a hug.
Thank you, Mark.
And having said that, let us wholeheartedly and warmly welcome Tijani, who is going to be Leon's successor. And Tijani is so modest, and he said, well, I'm not going to take the seat before Leon has officially left, but you are very welcome to the team of co-chairs, and let's give him a round of applause as well. Okay. Niels has raised his hand. Niels, any last-minute AOB?
Thomas, can I?
Sure. Let's let's let Leon go first.
Thank you. Well, I just want to thank you for not only the T-shirt, but all the work that we've done together. It's been an amazing experience to work with this very diverse, very intense, and very thoughtful group of people. I really have learned a lot from all of you, from all and each of you, and I want to thank you all for your kind support, for having these battles together to get us across the different bridges that we had to cross and burn at the same time. And it's been quite rewarding, and now I have the opportunity to continue to serve the community in another role, and I promise I won't let you down. So thank you very much again.
So Niels, you wanted to grab the mic?
Thanks so much, Thomas. So while we are now getting close to delivering the report, and only having spent so little money of our budget, we could end as well having so much brain power and experience congregated within Workstream 1 and 2 in the CCWG, is that perhaps we could take the time, the last time that we have together, to take it to see perhaps what possible horizons or advice could be for how to look beyond. So would it be possible to work in the subgroups a bit more on to see if there's a leeway or an advice or some high-level documents on how we could think about implementation? Because that way there would not be a hard cut between Workstream 2 and implementation. Would that be a thing that we could consider, or is everything tired and we want to see each other rather less than more?
I guess that's a good point, Niels. I think what we should consider, but that's maybe for one of the next plenaries to discuss, is actually to do implementation oversight or set a process up for implementation oversight as we usually do with GNSO, PDPs, and other recommendations that come out of the community. So that is, I guess, perfectly possible. And let's consider how we can do that. Probably there's no budget for such initiative, but we can check that. So that's good advice. So now let's move to agenda item 9, and that will be the co-chair statement.
Before I do, I just want to mention in tribute and thanks to Leon one other point about his magic. You know, a lot of the work we do in this environment is important. It reflects deeply held values and passionate commitments that many of us have. And temperatures can rise, things can get a bit heated, views can be overly firmly expressed. And the magic of humor is something that Leon has brought to these situations in a perfect and exemplary way more than once. And that's what I'll miss from you in this, as the newest and youngest of the co-chairs, standing in for Matthew Vey, who vanished off earlier this year. So thanks from me as well, Leon. In terms of a co-chair statement, we were just deliberating whether we should write something to the list rather than make you all wait while we try and do that now. And we might do that, but I think the key summary of this meeting is that the Workstream 2 accountability work is on track. As of the 2 second readings today, all of the parts of the project are pretty much ready to go. A sequence of public comments will be underway shortly. And the thing that I would urge you all to do within your SOs and ACs and the parts of the internet community that you're in is to take the news of these recommendations out and make sure your organizations have the chance to become familiar with them and to understand them. Because as we already discussed right at the beginning of today, the overall public... am I meant to stop? resuming that verbal summary. As I was saying, the approval process next year doesn't give us the opportunity to have a full litigation of all of the issues in the report. The public comment is designed to identify inconsistencies, which we can turn into consistencies through that process, rather than to have a full litigation. So the earlier your SOs and ACs are familiar with all of the content, the better. So we will prepare a written statement along these lines, noting the jurisdiction discussion this morning, noting the second readings done for jurisdiction and for transparency, and noting the approval process to come, and circulate that to the lists and to the community later on, hopefully in the next day or so. So I think that's the sort of verbal report back. I'll hand it back to Thomas or Leon if either of you got anything to add and to wrap up.
Actually, we have another intervention from Cavus.
The intervention is quite simple. It's not saying that this platform, CCWG, was a very successful platform of launching. We have two persons moved to the board, and we have another one directly or indirectly moved to the board three. So who is the next? Thank you.
Well, if I move to the board, it would raise the EQ both of the CCWG as well as the board.
Standards of behavior, Thomas. Standards of behavior.
Thanks so much, Cavus, for that intervention. I think we can now adjourn. And what I would like to do is thank all of you in the room, thank all the tech staff in the background that's helped to make this work, thank the remote participants, our excellent staff, our co-chairs, and all those that I have forgotten to mention explicitly. Thanks so much, and this meeting is now adjourned. The recording can be stopped.